The Oasis Podcast Live is back. We are coming to Manchester on the 11th of December, FAC 251, featuring the Oasis tribute band Oasis Supernova, YouTube sensation James Hargreaves debuting his new band, plus special guests, exhibitions, competitions and more. Get your tickets right now, eventbrite.co.uk, or hit the link in the description below.
All right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I hope you guys are well. We've got a two-parter for you today. First off, we're catching up with Richard and Ryan to discuss all the latest news that's been going on with Nebworth having been announced and Liam's album having been announced. So we get into all that with Richard and Ryan. By the time you're hearing this, you probably will have already applied for tickets for Liam's Nebworth. How did you get on? Are you going? What do you think about it? So yeah, all very exciting. And then also we have the long-awaited return of the Oasis A to Z eyeball tickler. So yeah, really looking forward to discussing that. I've recorded an interview with my old mate Joel. So that's really good. There's not a huge amount to say about eyeball tickler, we didn't think, but actually we ended up having quite a long and interesting conversation about it. So I hope you guys really enjoy that. And yeah, the plan is to get back on the A to Z because there's some really good stuff coming up, like fade away and fading out and things like that. So all good. Right. Anyway, without any more further Freddy ado, let's cross over to Richard and Ryan and myself. I should be used to that now, shouldn't I? Anyway, welcome back to the Oasis Podcast. Richard Bowes, how you doing, man?
I'm all right, mate. I'm all right. I'm, you know, quite enjoying. We speak on the day when there's, you know, WhatsApp and Facebook have gone down. I'm quite enjoying the peace and quiet, although it did make arranging this a little bit unusual because we had to text each other, which is obviously, yeah, a bit retro.
Very strange. Oh, we should go back to the old-fashioned BT phones when you press the orange button and sit on your mum's stairs. Yes, but it's been a big day for news. Well, big week for news, I suppose. And yeah, you're always the who I turn to when it's the big news days. So yeah, so we had a obviously the Nebworth film came out, and well, you know, you've now seen it. Yeah,
I have. Yeah. So on the Thursday night. Yeah. So yeah, I know you guys pretty much covered everything in the episode recently. You've gone all the thoughts I had, but yeah, definitely well worth seeing the pictures. Don't know that I'm in a rush to see it again. Obviously, I will watch it when the DVD comes. But the fan take was interesting and it was a good angle. I liked it, but I don't know that it would bear repeat viewings. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I did enjoy the spectacle. And yeah, obviously seeing the stuff, like I say, on the big screen was brilliant. And I was all right with the reenactments. So I thought it was all right. And I've said this on Twitter. I was Mark Owens. You know, I was the guy that was recording it at home. But yeah, it was good. It was good. It's a different beast from Supersonic and Lord Don't Slow Me Down and things like that. So I don't think you can really compare them. It's essentially, ostensibly a concert film, really. But yeah, it was good. I mean, it was the amount of footage they had and stuff was amazing. And it was good to finally see it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, so we have the Nebworth film. So obviously Nebworth is high in everyone's mind, and I'd seen people saying, oh, imagine, you know, oh, we want an Oasis reunion at Nebworth, we want this, we want somebody, oh, Liam should do Nebworth. That's popped up a few times over the months, and then it comes up, like, you know when Liam's Twitter, when you can tell it's not one of his tweets, you know, when it's like, you know, yeah, listen in at 8:30 tomorrow for an announcement. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay. And so I asked, you know, what do people think it is, and it was generally split between he's going to announce some gigs, you know, or he's going to announce a new single or the new album, or
he's announced he's got married, or you know, whatever it was, the, you know, all of these potential things it could have been. Or then there's like, oh, it's a wind-up, it'll be something crap, like, you know, oh, he's re-releasing As You Were as a, you know, another vinyl, or you know what they're like. And it's like, no, okay, so he's doing Nebworth next summer, and he's got a new album, and it's officially Come On, You Know, and we've got the artwork, and so he's announced that like months in advance, but to get it, you know, it's like a cheeky way of doing it, because you sort of, you get your code for Nebworth tickets, which go on sale like on the 6th. But to get that, you could get the bundle of, you know, with the CD or whatever, or the vinyl, would then give you the code for Nebworth thing. So it was like I think it was clever. It was like a cheeky way of, you know, of getting people to order the you know, the physical album. And all that will obviously count towards the sales when you can actually get it in 10 months or whatever. But yeah, it's then we have this massive double announcement. It was mad.
Yeah, they went big, didn't they? I mean, I was like you. I thought it would be a big show next year. I thought we'd get, yeah, a big announcement, summer show. I didn't see the album because, you know, he had spoken pre-lockdown or post Why Me, Why Not, that he was going to take a bit of a break. Now, obviously, you know, the timings might work out in this, when he said he was going to take the break. Obviously, lockdown massively affected it. But he's, yeah, I mean, he said on the radio that he had two albums on the go. But yeah, I was as surprised as you. I mean, we'll come on to Nebworth in a minute. But obviously, the album's good news. I mean, I guess it's, you know, it's the major label of Warner's, isn't it? It's like, yeah, pre-access codes, you know, buy the, and I fell for a hook, line, and sinker. I was like, right, buy the whatever edition, I think the booklet vinyl edition, 50 quid, to get a pre-access code. Then and then obviously the announcement was, because I think you leaked it on Twitter, and then it was like half an hour before half eight, so I got in quick. So people had problems with the website, didn't they, after that? Yeah, I bought mine early on, and then the announcement came on that, yeah, it was Nebworth. And the date of Nebworth, obviously we'd seen it was going to be Nebworth. I've got a few opinions on that. But yeah, it was certainly a bolt from the blue. It definitely came from nowhere.
Yeah, nuts to just, yeah, that sort of double announcement. I mean, I've never known an album to be announced, you know, that far in advance. What is it, May, and then October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May. Yeah, 7 months in advance. I mean, that's just bizarre, but understandable, because, you know, that's sort of, you know, just specifically for this thing of getting getting those physical sales, you know, just to, as a Nebworth tie-in. Although you can just get the £1 pre-sale ticket, effectively. So,
is that right?
Yeah, well, someone posted that on Discord earlier, and I hadn't. Like, I tried on the day, I tried like three times, and it was just whirring. I was just going to buy like the CD just to get there. And then I couldn't do it. And I've been meaning to jump back on today. And then someone put it on our Discord, like, oh, you can just go on and buy a £1 ticket pass.
Oh, interesting.
Like, all right, great, I'll do that then. Be a proper cheapskate. But but I always hold out hope that, you know, that I'll get, like, you know, a press pass, or I'll get sort of, you know, an invite from them for all the fantastic free promotion I give the Liam Gallagher people. But never going to happen. Never going to happen.
they hate us. They hate us. It's fine.
They do. That's fine. I've got no problem with that. Got no problem with that. That's okay. Well, you know, what have we been doing for the last 4.5 years? Whatever. Anyway, we're also joined by Ryan. How you doing, mate?
Good evening. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Were you excited about the news of the Nebworth and the album, the double hit?
Yeah, just completely by surprise, really, wasn't it? I think what it was for me, anyway. Certainly the Nebworth thing. Didn't see that coming at all. And album, of course. Well, so I bought the CD thinking that was the cheapest option, but didn't realize that, yeah, as we've seen today, there was a hidden place you could just buy the pre-sale. But I'm still not convinced I'd want to go to Nebworth. I think the idea of it is probably better than the reality. I don't know, just from maybe I'm too old for it. I don't know.
Why?
Would you not want in terms of it being I'd gone off kind of, you know, the heat and parts and those sort of things anyway already. I prefer smaller the venue, the better kind of thing nowadays. Maybe in my old age, I don't know. So to go then from that to Nebworth, it falls back into that category of crap sound. If you're willing to just go there and slob around for the day and stuff like that, but that's not generally what I do. So I don't know. I'd have to have a bit of a change of a heart of what I was expecting, I think, to go. But I'll think about it, but I've only got till Wednesday or Friday to really think about it, I guess, I imagine it's not going to be too hard to get tickets in the end, maybe initially, but I'm sure there'll be plenty after the initial rush.
You would think so, wouldn't you? And this is something, maybe. You know, I asked on Twitter as well, what do people think, how's it going to sell? Is he going to do 50,000, 70,000, 100,000, 125,000, or could we see it sell out and then announce the second day, you know, like, which is feasible, you know, but I mean, I was saying, well, if you look at his 2019 tour, I think he did about 20 arena dates, playing to an average of 10,000-15,000. And obviously I know that's all around the UK and Ireland, but still for Nebworth, because it's special, people will travel from Scotland and Wales and Manchester and things to Nebworth, especially if it's the only big show he does. Whereas it wouldn't, you know, for Heaton Park, I know some people travel from down south up to Heaton Park, but I probably wouldn't bother. You know, I'd wait for him to come to London or somewhere closer. And then similarly, I doubt a lot of people would have come down from like Manchester or Scotland for Finsbury Park. But Nebworth has got that special thing. And especially with knowing that, you know, having just done this film and everyone getting so excited about the 25 years of it, I think it's just a genius move, really, to do it. But go on.
And I guess it will probably attract bigger groups of people wanting to go, I suppose, as well. So that might push up the numbers more like a festival.
Right, well, the crack is, so I'm going to be doing next year, I'm going to be playing Nebworth. Yeah. This is history, part two, mate. And we're going to be there, and it's like a few other people playing and that, and it's going to be mega. The young folk want it, mate, you know what I mean? They're always telling me, man, they're always going, when are they going to do this Nebworth thing? I'm like, look, you know, but I think the time is now, it's now or never.
I've got to say, it leaves me really cold, this. I've got to say, I posted about it, like, the pincer movement of Noel doing all the publicity before the film, and then when, you know, right when it's at its kind of zenith and everyone knows Nebworth, and it's all up there in the public consciousness, then Liam announces this. I don't know, the whole, it just, I don't know, I just, yeah, that, I mean, I have similar kind of opinions with Ryan as well about the actual gig itself, but like, just, I don't know, it just feels really cynical. Now, I doubt from what like Noel was saying on Matt Morgan, you know, who comments about, you know, his surprise at Liam not being involved with the film, this might now explain it, you know, they were keeping their power dry for this, but I don't know, it just, yeah, I had a chat with Katie about this, and I hope she doesn't mind me kind of using some of her words. She says she feels a little bit manipulated by it, and I do kind of feel a little bit like that. It does feel a little bit like, you know, they're trying to, the recapturing of the magic at the exact time, and it's not going to be the same. It's going to be nowhere near the same. Now, bear in mind, I'm saying this through the prism of someone who can't go, so I'm a bit cynical about it anyway.
You're just bitter. You're a bitter
loser. A little bit bitter. But, yeah, I mean, it seemed to me a bit of a single cashing, because it's not going to capture the remagic of Nebworth, because, you know, we all know what made them what they were. You know, it's Liam on his own. It's not going to be as iconic. It just feels like it's going to be like a poor sequel. Do you know what I mean? Like a very average sequel that, you know, is going to be a bit that's going to let you down, but you'll go anyway. And people like us would go out of habit, but I can't help but feel there's going to be the comparisons. I'm presuming you go, James, you're going to go there, and in your head you are going to be making that comparison, just because that's natural instinct. And I think that'll probably leave a bit of a sour taste personally. That's kind of my take on it. I know people have moaned about the support acts. The support acts, I think, are quite good, actually. I think it's quite a strong bill. I know people want the 90s bands and so on and so forth, but, you know, it's not the 90s anymore. I think I do like the fact it's quite diverse, and it's quite eclectic in that respect, but once I got over the fact that I realised I couldn't go, and I made peace with that, I kind of rationalised myself as, well, actually, I mean, yeah, I just think it's also such a big venue, and, you know, as good as his band have got, and as improved as his band are, can they do that? I mean, we're presuming it's 125,000 people. We don't know. It might be less than that. You're right. It might be like 70 or whatever. But, you know, I think that's a big ask for him on his own. And it'll be, you know, he makes a point of doing an hour and a half set. You know, so it'll be quite short. Unless they've got a huge lot of value for money. And finally, I think it's pretty much put the nail in the coffin of any hopes of an Oasis reunion. Because where do they go from here? So, I mean, like the symbolism of Liam doing that, it means not that they would do Nebworth, but, you know, it cuts that off. And it's very much, it feels like a very much a riposte from Liam to Noel, as if say, well, sod it, I'm going to do it on my own. That's not going to help Liam's long-term objective of getting the band back together either, I don't think.
Well, I must say I'm disappointed in both of you. This is a special day for millions of fans around the world. And the two greatest patrons and listeners and friends of the podcast come on, and you're both being so negative. I think it's a disgrace, and I think you're both, I'm going to bin you off this call immediately and try and get some more positive people on.
Mine's just informed by the fact that I can't go, mainly, to be honest. I'm just making myself feel better.
All right.
Yeah, and I think mine is, because I didn't go, so I haven't got, James, your reference point that I might, you know, it's a memory I can relive kind of thing, and it just falls into that sort of Heaton Park type thing, where I didn't go to those for a reason, and this would kind of be the same.
Yeah,
is that I just prefer those little special gigs I might manage to wangle my way into now and again, the Ritzes and those things. I think that's, whereas it'd be a totally different thing. So I'll have to give it a think in the next couple of days. But yeah, I'm not jumping, and the support acts for me as well is not a pull either. So I was just like meh. So yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I think it. In terms of if I had the choice of seeing Liam at the Ritz or seeing Liam at Nebworth, I'd probably go to the Ritz, right? You know, and if it's a case of, you know, I'd like to appreciate the music, you know, 90 minutes of playing, then no, you know, if I wanted that, then I'd see Noel at Blenheim Palace, right? There, you know, which is, you get to sit there and you have your prawn sandwiches or whatever and have a brilliant band play. Whereas I think this is more just about, as I said, it's the nostalgia. It's going to be the fact, it's the event of, you know, being in that place and having everyone there. I think that's the key thing, really. Yeah, Liam's band, you know, might not play it that well. They might be good. Yeah, I know what you mean. It will pale in comparison to Oasis there, but, you know, nothing that we will never ever see Oasis do it, or even if we ever did, it's Oasis in their 50s 60s, so it's never going to be the same. Sounds like a song lyric.
Do you have a thought of why Liam wasn't really in the film? I don't think it's because he's doing Nebworth. It feels like there's another reason. That I know he was touring at the time, so maybe he just couldn't do it or couldn't be asked. I don't think he purposely wasn't in it because they had an announcement to make like the following week, because it was obviously much more of a bigger project than that. So yeah. I assume he didn't want to, or don't know.
He makes the point there, doesn't he? He's like, I can't really remember it anyway. Do you know what I mean? And like, I imagine probably the director also went with it, like the fans' point of view. Liam's got, well, okay, if it's the fans, that's great. But, you know, it's the fans' story, therefore what can I contribute? But, you know, he's not in the nicest way. He's not the most articulate anyway. And I think he probably just felt like, yeah, I don't really have much to offer, because, you know, Noel makes the point that it's a good line, it's not true, but, you know, Liam says he got trashed the first night and didn't remember doing the second, etc. He might just be along those lines, like, you know, as biblical as it was to all intents and purposes another gig, how much more could he add? Maybe that's my kind of take on it. I think he was probably, and also obviously Noel and Ignition were very involved as well.
Yeah, it's like I said in the pod, like, I think that if they got and hearing Gareth, who was in the film, like saying, you know, oh, they were showing him the footage, and so he was reacting to the footage and as they were recording him. And I think if they'd done that with him, then maybe he would have, you know. And like I was saying, if he was sat there with Bonehead, say, for instance, and he's got someone to riff off, you know, even if it was like just done really casual, not like in a proper recording studio or whatever, because I just think he'd be like, I don't remember it, I can't be asked, you know. Whereas if you could imagine him like doing like the commentary, you know, like Lord Don't Slow Me Down commentary and stuff. If you've got him like, oh, look at him there, you know, oh, Bonehead, you know, whatever, that sort of thing. I think that would have, you know, you would have got some bits from him then. But yeah, I think based on based on him just saying like, oh, what do you remember about Edwards? Nothing, you know, like, you know.
Yeah, I didn't really miss him when I was watching it either. Like, I knew that he was only one line at the end, but because there was so much unseen stuff of him messing about in between, hanging off the camera crane, and there was enough Liam in it, and even Noel said Liam's the best thing in it. Like, there was a lot of Liam through it.
Yeah,
I suppose you didn't need him sort of grunting and all the way through it with his usual sort of lack of memory, as you say. So, yeah, I didn't miss the fact that he wasn't commentating over it, but. You'd want it, as you say, like with Bonehead or something like that, a different angle to it rather than the usual.
Yeah. And he's never done, like when he does chat shows and things, like, you know, it's not like you can go, oh, Liam, tell us the story of this. Like, I know he's done it a couple of times, but it's not, mm-hmm. it's not how he does it, is it? It's he always sort of feels a little bit weird. It's not natural to him. But yeah, so I get that. But anyway, while we're talking about that, Brian, what was your firstly, what did you think of the film? But also, I believe that you submitted your memories, but you've got a bit of a story about that.
Yeah. So the film wise, I didn't really know what to. Well, we kind of knew a bit what to expect from the trailer, and I just wondered how much of it was going to be fans commentating all the way through, how much of Noel there would be, etc. But I certainly enjoyed mainly the listening to the music in the cinema. Pumping through once they turned it up properly, because there's always a bit of an issue with volume in the cinema, I think. But it was great just hearing and seeing the visuals. Just there was enough songs, I think. So I wasn't sure as well how much songs they would play. I thought maybe they'd save that for the DVD, and then the whole thing is going to be a documentary, which I think it had the right balance. I agree with you on your points of some of them you probably could do with the people not talking over them. Some of the songs, because I really did enjoy hearing the songs properly rather than from the bootlegs and things like that. So enjoyed the film. I did enjoy the fan stuff a bit, but again, as you said, I won't want to see that again and again kind of thing. So I did enjoy it for the time, but quite happily would have also sat in the cinema and watched the actual gig from start to end, I think, as well, which is a shame we'll never get to do that, I suppose. But we'll just have to do that at home. So I enjoyed it, but Supersonic's still better for me, I think. And that's, again, because it's purely Noel and Liam talking all the way through. So that's kind of gold from that point of view, I think. And then, yeah, I did submit my memories and got an interview, had to sign a non-disclosure and things. So I've not heard from anyone else on these various groups we're on, you know, collector group and things like that. I know a few of the guys in the collector group were on the film, or two or three, was it? But I've not heard someone else say that they had an interview but didn't get in, but that's what happened to me. So I submitted my memory. I saw the tweet, I think it was in February when they put it out. And I initially thought, oh yeah, I didn't go, it's not for me kind of thing. But then I thought, oh, hang on, they'll probably want a few different angles. I think they might have even said it on one of the emails or something to say, even if you didn't go, if you've got a story around it, etc. So for me, hearing Nebworth on Radio 1 was my introduction to my Oasis obsession, really. So as I've said a long time ago on the pod, I think. But I didn't hear it live. I actually recorded it, flipped the tape over, as you see as everyone recognized in the film, and then listened to it on the day after, which is when I was going to uni. I was leaving home on that day, and so I had that tape on in the car, I think, and then heard all the stuff like the master plan and everything. I was just instantly like hooked with that. So and that's what led me to then sit and listen to that tape for about a year solid, just again and again drove my university hall mates crazy, I've no doubt, or my the neighbors in my hall, I'm sure. And then picked up the guitar and then carried on playing guitar from that. So learned guitar by playing all those songs on the that 96 set list, basically. So I wrote that, and you only had like 100, 200 words or something. I can't remember what it was. So I squeezed that, the fact that I'd listened, recorded off the radio, had an epiphany moment the next day listening to it. And then just I learned guitar, and then also into my sons now doing stuff with, they've been in School of Rock, and my sons played the Royal Albert Hall already. So I kind of squeezed all that into one big paragraph. And I thought that might, you know, bite them a bit of interest. And it did, obviously. So they then sent me the non-disclosure and said, we'd like to do a Zoom interview with you. So that was in mid-March. So then obviously couldn't tell anyone about that. And then so just had I think it was half an hour Zoom with this nice lady from RSA Films, I think it was. So just one, they said they were doing multiple at the time. So she then asked me about that, about the tape. And I'd submitted a photo as well. So I put all my memorabilia on. You could put a photo as a thing, so that was the other thing I used to grab their attention. So I put all my like tickets, stubs, and stuff. And then I thought, oh, I'll put the tape on as well, because I thought I had the tape still, because I've got about 10 tapes in the loft of tapes that I saved, but I ditched everything else. And I could have sworn I kept those, but I actually went up to the loft and I didn't have it, and I ditched them. So the GMAX 97 tape and the Nebworth tape, I thought, you know, I can picture them in my mind what they are. And I thought I'd save them. I'd obviously culled them at some point when I said, oh, we don't need those. We've got the downloads now from on MP3 or whatever, 15 years ago or something. So I thought, oh no. So then I mocked up a tape, like photoshopped it basically, and wrote Nebworth 96 on it. And it was quite a convincing picture, actually. So whether that was anything to do with it or not, I don't know. But she did say in the interview, oh, you still got the tape? I was like, yeah, it's in the loft. Thinking, if they want the tape, I'll have to make one. I mean, I do have some tapes in the loft, so I could have just relabeled one of them and then recorded the MP3 onto it. So I do have a tape recorder still. So there was all this going on in my mind, going, I'm going to have to do something here if they carry on with this. But I thought my story sort of runs out of steam, and I guess it did, but it was similar to the guy who was recording off the radio. So yeah. Mark Owens, well, I remember the name, guy from Take That. He had a brother, which was good for the story, and it was the same story, basically. And I also know that they didn't then go into any of what happened to any of those guys afterwards. So my follow-on bit was, oh, now my sons and everything. So I didn't think they'd want that, and it probably proves true that that wasn't really what they're interested in. They just wanted the actual story with the Nebworth thing. So I didn't suspect they'd do anything with it like that. So then I eventually got an email in June saying, thank you for your contribution, blah, 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 but you've not been selected, kind of thing. So, but that was mid-June I got that email.
But you know what, that's good that they actually told you you're not being selected, you know, because...
Yeah, I was surprised to get that, yeah.
That is good, isn't it? Because otherwise, yeah. Like, you know, it's like doing a job interview or whatever, and it's like, well, I haven't heard, so I'm presuming I haven't got the job, you know.
April, yeah, so it was 3 months from my Zoom that I didn't hear anything, and they just sort of said, right, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. But she was asking, like, my Union Jack guitar was behind me, she was asking about that, but I had no idea how much she knew about Oasis, so I was saying things like, oh yeah, that's more like the Main Road thing. Whether she would know what the Main Road thing was, I had no idea, but probably she seemed not. To be nodding along. But I was like, well, I've got to talk Oasis release. So I wasn't sure how to judge how well it was going at the time. It was all a bit weird, obviously. But in the midst of all the other Zoom interviews we were and work stuff we were doing at the time, I just slipped in this Oasis Zoom for half an hour with this recording company. So yeah, it was almost made it to the film. But yeah, my story was similar to the other guys as well, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did enjoy that. Pretty much everyone laughed at that point of kids will never know it's getting the tape flipped over within 3 seconds so you can catch the start of the next song. I have to explain that to my sons as well. I think it went over his head. I've never actually explained that.
That was that definitely got the biggest reaction in the cinema. And sitting on my, you know, mum's second step, you know.
Bottom step, yeah.
Yeah, that was the two that got the big reaction in, I think. Which is mad, isn't it? In everything else that happened in that film with the cinema. And yeah, it's those two technology things that
used to forget that you were tethered to the hall with the phone, basically.
Yeah. But then yeah. that's probably one thing I did think about the film, and again, this probably comes from the fact I'm bitter about it, because if you didn't go, you were very much reminded that you didn't go, because it did feel like it was very much like, oh, you had to be there, it was amazing, that sort of stuff. And, you know, for the 250,000 people, you know, but for people like Ryan and I, it's like, well, you know, there's probably more people that watch the film that can relate to the tape experience rather than the actual gig experience. It's probably why I got the reaction did, because it did, like I say, it did have that kind of, you know, you had to be there, man. And if you weren't, you're a loser kind of vibe to it. Like, wait on. You know, some of us were trying. We were the people on the steps. We were the people pressing redial.
Yeah.
Did you submit, James, yes. a memory to it? Did you?
Yeah. So I submitted
about the pod, obviously.
Yeah. So I've kind of, you know, told my story on here, but I did submit it. Just heard nothing back at all, you know, and I thought, you know, ultimately, like you're saying, like with an ending, you know, I'd say the ending being, and the day after, you know, because this is true. The day after I came back from Nebworth, I phoned my mate Joel sitting on the bottom step with my, you know, my mum's house phone and said, you know, I think we should combine our musical talents. And he said, you haven't got any musical talent. I said, all right, well, you know, you can play the guitar and do everything and I'll swagger about. That's fine. We'll figure it out. Yes. But, you know, so the fact that number one, I started a band the next day, which then, you know, didn't do anything, but you know what I mean? That's quite a big deal, I think. That's quite cool. And number two, I went on to do the Oasis podcast. So I think those two things, I think were, you know, I think that would have been quite a good thing to be in the film, but obviously, you know.
Yeah, so as I said, they didn't want any of the after what's happened to those people or anybody after, because obviously it's not Oasis related necessarily.
Yeah, you know, well, my brother died soon after, and this thing we had, wasn't there? There was that one, I suppose. But you didn't want too many of them, because otherwise it would get a bit like X Factor, wouldn't it? And everyone's got a sob story.
And Noel had mentioned that one 10 times already.
Yeah,
before you saw the film as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I did apply for Radio X's competition, though. So if I get my VIP pair of tickets from Chris Moyles, I'll go. No problem with the VIP toilets and everything like that. But yeah,
sure, definitely. But don't you want to slum it with the real people?
Would it be in the 7,000 VIP section? I don't know.
I doubt we'll have 7,000 VIPs at this one. No. And then just quickly about the album, going back to that. So we've got the Come On You Know, as we kind of expected was going to be the title. I like the image at Transmit Festival with Liam in there with all the fans and stuff. I think that's really cool. I think it's good. You know, up to now, the two Liam Gallagher covers we've had has just been him and that was it. Whereas I think it's nice that he's in with the fans. I think that's really cool. And I suppose the other bit we had, that interview that he sort of said that there's a song called Better Days that's very sunshiny, and there's one that's about Noel, which is, well, to be expected.
All right, so the new album is coming out. You can pre-order the new album. What's your favourite track on the new album, Liam? Go.
Right, there's a new one called, this next single is going to be called Better Days, and it's full of sunshine.
I think.
And then there's another one called I Wish I Had More Power, and it's dedicated to Noel.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a naughty little tune, but it's lovely.
Can't believe he's done a track dedicated to Noel Edmonds. That's massive.
Yeah. Noel Edmonds.
See what I did there, Liam? You see what I did?
Yeah, I like it.
Thanks very much. Thanks.
Yeah, man.
I wonder if his tongue was in cheek with the Noel one. I've got to say, that did sound like he was in quite jovial form, wasn't he? And he was quite happy to chip into his little brother and stuff. I wonder if that one will actually be true. But yeah, the Better Days one, I mean, you can hear it already, can't you? You know, it's going to be, it's probably going to be slightly Lennon-y. It's going to be a very kind of positive, uplifting, I imagine, treading that very fine tightrope of a little bit cheesy. But, you know, that's what we want, isn't it? I mean, that's goes back to Nebworth thing as well. He's very much giving the people what they want, which has been his MO since they came back. You know, whether or not it's a wise idea, you know, the reaction it's got, you know, suggests it is what they want, and that's what he's doing. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't get the impression this will be the punk album. the stripped down punk album that he's been talking about. I've got a feeling it's probably going to be summery, sunshiny, like Andrew Wyatt style again.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is fine.
Did you hear him on Chris Moyles? Is that where he said the thing about Noel?
Yeah.
Is it a clip on Chris Moyles? I saw it on YouTube. I didn't see it on the day, but I saw it yesterday, I think. But he was in quite, a jovial mood, as you said. It was. Yeah. I think Chris Moyles even struggled with him, so it was quite nice to hear.
But, you know, it just annoyed me again. I don't want to go on about this, but, you know, Moyles goes to him, what's your top three favourite Beatles songs? It's like...
Oh, God, yeah.
Why would you bother asking? And then you just know, Liz go, I don't know, Imagine, like, you know, come on. Yeah. Where did that even come from? But anyway.
It was a bit like Chris Evans the other week with Noel, wasn't it? It's quite cringeworthy, half of it. But it's, those old school Chris's from the radio.
Yes.
On the night of the Nebworth gig, guess who I'll probably be watching?
Go on.
Gorillaz.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, saw that on Twitter, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to Primavera, and Gorillaz are headlining on the Sunday night, so.
Oh, wow.
Yes. But I will say I've probably got more chance of seeing Noel than anyone else, or anyone at Nebworth. Mm.
Yes, yeah, definitely more chance of seeing Noel at the Gorillaz gig. Cool. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time this evening.
You see too. You later. See you. Speak to you soon.
All right, I hope you guys enjoyed that. It's a few days later. It's now Thursday evening. And quick update. The tickets obviously went on sale this morning. After a bit of hassle, the pre-sale email had come through for me. And I used my pre-sale thing and I got on and I got my tickets for Nebworth on the Saturday. And I think I was like number 16,000 in the queue or something when I logged on. And there was also other people that were like 26,000. I think the highest I saw was like 28,000, which is incredible. There was 28,000 people in the queue, you know. Basically what then happened is they have now announced a second day. So he's now doing the Friday. When you hear this, by the time you hear this, it will have already gone on sale to the general public tomorrow morning, Friday morning. And and we shall see. Maybe he'll sell out two nights at Nebworth, which is just absolutely insane to think that Liam Gallagher could do that. When you think about like where he was 10 years ago with BDI, you know, about 10 years ago, I was watching him play with BDI at the Swindon Oasis, which is about like 2,000 people, if that. And they were struggling to sell those out. So it's really an incredible transformation and truly, you've got to hold your hands up to the guru, Debbie, for masterminding it. We will be doing a meetup because pretty much everyone that listens to the podcast is going to be there, except for like the Americans and the New Zealand and Aussies and things. So, if you're going to Nebworth, then obviously stay in touch and we'll definitely have like a Nebworth meetup somewhere in the field and have some fun. So anyway, amazing day. Very exciting. Two nights, probably going to sell out both nights. Incredible. And over to Eyeball Tickler. Now, the first thing before we get into the main interview with my mate Joel, the one thing I didn't mention is that there's a demo version of Eyeball Tickler. And it basically sounds exactly the same as the main version of Eyeball Tickler. So let's have a little bit of both the demo and the main version. And then, and you'll hear that they're basically exactly the same. And then we'll cross over to myself talking to Joel. And then we've also had a message come in from the guys at the band Bob Owler. So we're going to drop that in as well. No!
welcome back to the Oasis podcast. My good friend Joel, how you doing, man?
I'm good. It's been a while.
It has been a long time, hasn't it? It's been probably the longest gap of not having you on the pod for a long time, actually.
Well, from the last one, the Big in India discussion about Take Me and Sad Song.
Yeah, and it is Big in India. That's I haven't talked about this on here. It's like us discussing Sad Song and Take Me is the most popular episode in the history of the podcast. And like, yes, I'm sure that some people enjoyed it, but it's got like as many views as like Tony McCarroll. And it's like, it just doesn't make sense. And I can see where the views are. And a lot of them are in India, which isn't one of my biggest markets. So I think you've set up a Twitter farm in a click farm in India on it just to sort of big yourself up. But you're denying this. So anyway, it's good to have you back, Joel. And today, and one of the reasons I've got you back is no one else in from the thousands of listeners and the hundreds of people that contribute to this podcast have got anything to say about Eyeball Tickler. And so to like call in my oldest best mate.
Yeah, it can be relied upon to come up with some random nonsense about an obscure Oasis B-side, although less so about the later stuff, actually. I do remember Eyeball Tickler from the time because it was a B-side to Lila.
Yeah.
If I got that wrong, it demonstrates that actually I didn't know anything about it. It was just come on to blag it. And although it's quite upbeat and rocking, and in a way that a lot of the B-sides stopped being, they started being like acoustic and weird and annoying and a bit lo-fi, and that one is almost like Head Shrinker-esque in terms of its how it feels, the atmosphere of the song. It's not a classic by any means, and it's not written by Noel. It's not that the magic of Noel writing Liam singing, but you have got Liam singing, which is I think a good thing.
Yeah, so it is an interesting one in that it was a B-side for Lila. So it was a B-side for a number one single, which is a big deal, you know. That is a big deal. But yeah, I'd say it rocks, and it's good to have like a rocky song, because like you said, like a lot of them around that time are like Won't Let You Down or Pass Me Down the Wine or Sitting Here in Silence on My Own and things like that. They're either, you know, written by Liam and a bit weird, or they're written by Noel and a bit weird. And so there wasn't really many classic B-sides around this era. But I think it's one that I do probably listen to more than a lot of them, just because it's just a cool riff, really. It's a song based around a cool riff. There's very little melody in the whole thing, is there? It's just literally that na 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 na. That's it.
The lyrics, something about a monkey eating your brain, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the lyrics are great. I mean, the one thing about the structure of it is it's almost like an experiment in, you know what I mean? It's almost anti-structure, because it doesn't have a verse, a chorus or whatever. It's just the riff. Well,
the refrain is the bit where Liam is just shouting at progressively higher notes over the down, 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 ah! And then he goes back to singing about a monkey again.
Yeah, so would you say that was a chorus?
Does that only happen the once, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. It doesn't have a classic Oasis song structure. It's like intro, riff, then there's the main sequence of the song, then there's that middle, that's almost like a middle eight, isn't it? And then they go back to the main sequence, and then it finishes. Yeah. And I can't bring to mind how long it is, but I suspect quite a short track, like 2.5 minutes, is it?
Yeah, it's like 2:47.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, and so So let's have a look at the lyrics then, shall we? Listen to the monkey feeding on your brain and feel no pain, no pain. A tired of shocking junkie sucking on your veins, don't get no waste, no waste. A giant running hunchback, I felt it, but never daisies in my way, you don't say. I got my drib drab Velcro mustache, keeps them all at bay, get yours today, oh yeah. Don't squeeze that lover paycheck, burning up your day, don't get no love, no love. Double takes for free man, an empty handed feast, ain't got enough, get enough. Come on like an eyeball tickler, get off your knees and smile above, more above. Ah, 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 wah.
Yeah, and then... those are nonsense, and not in the John Lennon, Lucy in the Sky, I Am a Walrus tradition. It's like the ramblings of a madman.
Yeah, there's that. I love to try and analyze lyrics, but there is literally nothing there. It's just I'll drop in a clip in the episode. But the only interview I can find with him talking about this is with our friend who does the Stage Left podcast. And in that he just said he kind of likes the lyrics and he likes the way that the syllables work with the music kind of situation.
Because I like that kind of lyric. It's just having fun with it. And I suppose it's because I really used to like the kind of Chuck Berry way of coming at it.
Which
and
is?
Through that, well, they're just perfect. I mean, like, you know, the way the syllables and the phrases are, but then I used to really like the Ramones a hell of a lot. And I used to put the two together of the way... I used to think like chewing out a rhythm on my bubble gum, the sun is out and I want some, could be a Chuck Berry lyric.
Yeah.
And so there's a bit of that, I think, in Hung in a Bag. And I think I get Tarzan in there as well and all that. And I
Tarzan,
just,
yeah.
I can't remember.
And monkeys and...
But yeah, you know, so it's that kind of...
Because eyeball tickler's a bit like that.
That's why I have that sort of thing of that.
Yeah.
I'm making fun with words, I suppose, but... And, you know, I'm not one of those to analyse it, but...
So songs like Eyeball Tickler, I mean, Eyeball Tickler to me sounds like the soundtrack to a riot. It's fucking amazing. Do you think when you were writing Oasis, did the music convey a different side to you than you did in previous songs? Like, were you angry at anything? What were you channeling when writing those kind of songs? Because they didn't...
Eyeball Tickler's probably more to do with that, the feel of the riff.
Yeah.
And just trying to be not angry, kind of just vicious.
Yeah.
And it's a bit daft, I think, as well. Like, ding, 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 ding. I don't know. So, I can't even remember the lyrics for Eyeball Tickler, but even just the title.
What does it mean?
I'd have to know what the verses are, but it's probably, I'm thinking, something that gets you off, something amuses you, you know. I don't know. If it tickles your eyeballs, maybe. I don't know. You tell me.
It does go with the tune. I mean, when you sit and read it out like poetry, particularly the no pain, no pain. It's terrible, but in the context of the song, it's actually quite good.
Yeah. I mean, there's some funny images in here, a giant running hunchback, and then I got my drib drab Velcro mustache.
Like, get yours today.
I know. I mean, that is got a sort of a definitely like a Beatlesy feel to it.
It's a bit of fun, very forgettable, appears as soon as it disappears. There's some nice guitar work, it's heavy, it's rocking, can't argue with that. There's that riff that goes all the way through that I am sure is exactly the same as something else that has yet to fall from the sky into my memory, but there is the guitar riff is incredibly derivative.
Is it the only thing I was thinking it could be is Jet. It's similar to Are You Gonna Be My Girl?
Definitely that sort of thing. And actually, one of the things that I thought listening to that again, it's not a song that I've really gone back to, is it's very of its time in a way that if you think most of the Oasis music that had gone before defined what music at the time sounded like. So later Oasis, and certainly Eyeball Tickler, sounds very much like Gem Archer rather than Noel Gallagher trying to write a Jet song or a 2220s or the Vines, you know, that sort of rocking, bluesy, quite basic guitar and shouty gravel voice vocal that song is. And as I pointed out to you over WhatsApp yesterday, there was an album that I bought in 2003 by a band from America, Atlanta, called The Hiss, who had toured with Oasis at the end of 2003. And the first track on their album, which presumably was the first single, because that's how it always used to be, was a song called Clever Kicks. And you listen, and the album cover of that is like sort of quite surrealist, but then in the middle of the page is a massive eyeball. And I'd always thought, it dawned on me that I think Clever Kicks sounds like Eyeball Tickler. But maybe it's just because I'm thinking of the massive eyeball on the front of the album cover. But then I went back and listened to it yesterday. It's like the 18,353rd listen this song has ever had on Spotify. And lo and behold, it does actually sound passably like Eyeball Tickler. But that album was released in 2003, would have been their big single in relative terms. They supported Oasis. Oasis released an album in 2005, did a load of demos in 2005, one of which is Eyeball Tickler. So I would posit, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, that could well have been an influence for this song.
And guess who produced the Hiss's album?
Was it Owen Morris by any
chance? Owen Morris. So, yeah, I think it's, I mean, it's definitely like another part that comes up in that interview with Gem and Chris from Stage Left is that he mentions that on the bus at the time they were listening to a lot of different music, you know, Gem and Andy coming into the band. And one of the things he mentions is listening to The Creation. And specifically, they talk about How Does It Feel to Feel? And like, and Andy was like, we used to play that. Like, they actually released it as a single. But I can hear Biff Bang Pow a lot in this.
Yeah, really can. And also, that's all down, 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 down. That kind of is quite that insistent drum beat. That's quite my generation.
Yeah.
That sort of heavier brick beat sound. The Creation were obviously at the tail end of, and you're right, I listened to Big Bang Pow again after you'd said it, and it's like, oh yeah, I can really hear it there.
Oh man, it was all that kind of banter of, you know, Noel would say, "Have you heard the Creation do? How does it feel to feel?" And me going, "No," and then playing it and just going, "How the hell have I not heard this in my life?" Things like that.
Yeah,
you know. And then Andy going, "Yeah, Ride used to do this."
Yeah. So it was definitely, I mean, that whole scene, like you said, with the Strokes and then the Vines and Jet and all those bands in that sort of that all that big wave of the bands that came out following like the White Stripes and the Strokes, I suppose, there was that you know, it was that kind of garage rock sound, you know, harkening back to those sort of late 60s bands and like you said, I think Oasis definitely like took that on in a number of tunes. And this is one of them. And then you've got sort of, it's definitely there. And I suppose it's like having the players to be able to do it, you know, that sort of more riff based rather than kind of chord based. So there was just more, you know, they were able to do that, whereas they couldn't really do that with the previous lineup.
No. And it's also Gem, whose background wasn't writing. Definitely maybe Morning Glory. Gem's background was heavy stereo and quite a different sound. And, you know, you've got Liam Gallagher's vocal, which is going to make most things sound as good as they possibly can.
Yeah.
But it's not like Noel came up with it. I mean, very capable of that sort of stomp as you just listen to some of the stuff he'd written. And probably still does write. He doesn't tend to play anymore. And the other piece of interesting trivia, which I remember from a YouTube video that I couldn't find yesterday, which is irritating, so I had to do a side-by-side comparison, is that it's the third scream is the highest note that Liam sings, certainly in a non-falsetto in his recorded career. And when I said to you I thought that was the case, you said, "What about fading out?" And I was like, "No, that's pretty loud and high as well." And I compared them side by side, and I'm pretty confident they're the same note.
Okay.
So if you stick them both side by side, for the benefit of the listeners, they can be the judge of whether or not my ear isn't right.
Cool. But, well, dear listeners, you'll probably be hearing that right now. Let's just go to some what the people said. So I did the poll on it. Five out of five got 14%, which I thought was quite high. I mean, it's a good tune. It's a rocking tune, but it's not a five out of five, surely. Four out of five got 21%. Three out of five got 40%. And two out of five got 25%. And a couple of people did say like one or zero in the comments. So, I mean, a three out of five tune, I think that's fair. Personally, I'd probably put it about there.
Yeah. But this is the point, right? It's if it had been on one of those 30 albums that I would have bought in 2003, 2004, when I discovered the joy of like Amazon recommendations, just pile them into the basket and get them all for £6. I'd have thought, wow, that's a great track. As I said, you know, I like that album by The Hiss, and I listened through to all of it again today. It was like, there are hooks in all of these songs that I enjoyed, actually. You know, like in some cases, they probably had like 1,200 listens since they posted on Spotify. But if I Will Tickler had been on their album, I'd have been like, that's probably the best song on the album.
Right, okay.
But, you know, you're comparing that to the pantheon of music that band put out, and then, you know, unless you just want to give everything five out of five, and you kind of lose the ability to have an opinion at the point that you start doing that, three out of five is tough for Ivor Tickler. You know, it's for Oasis, it's a two out of five, one out of five song.
Yeah. I can't remember how it did when we did our head-to-head sort of knockout tournament. Probably got knocked out pretty early by something, I'd imagine.
We probably laughed at the fact that it was against whatever song it was against and moved on.
Yeah, that's probably the case. All right, let's see what comments we had. Ian Armstrong from Oasis tribute band Oasis Supernova, who will be at our gig on the 11th of December, says, "Better than Meaning of Soul, I love it, should have been on the album." Yes, that's something we talk about. Would it have made the album for you? Not for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. But it's not Liam, is it? And that's the reason why they've not probably the reason it's not on the album, because it was would have been relegating a Liam track.
Yeah, true. But yeah, I mean, you'd have to ditch something off of Don't Believe the Truth. I mean, Don't Believe the Truth goes Turn Up the Sun, Mucky Fingers, Lila, Love Like a Bomb, Importance of Being Idle, Meaning of Soul, Guess God Thinks I'm Able, Part of the Queue, Keep the Dream Alive, A Bell Will Ring, Let There Be Love. So yeah, I don't know. I think if it had like a chorus, or if it had like an extra different bit, or it broke down or something, but I just think as it is, it's almost like not finished. You know what I mean? I think it's like a good part of a song, but actually you could, but you know, it's, so I think it's as, I wouldn't probably drop anything like that for it. So I think probably a B-side is the best place for it.
Yeah. Well, the reason that you can't have a chorus is that it's already put, everything is pushed up to 10 right from the start. So you couldn't pay that off. If you think about like constructing a piece of music where the chorus, where the verse builds up and the chorus pays off, where do you pay that off other than by screeching?
Yeah.
Pretty much like, you know, smashing nicely into overdrive right from the start, isn't it? I mean, I'm not saying it's brilliant that it's like that, but that is what it's like. There isn't really anywhere that you can take it up to the next level.
Got you. Okay. We Are DNA says, middling Gem penned Don't Believe the Truth B-side. It's fast and loud, but pretty garbage. I never could make out the lyrics, but they are worse than I expected. I got my drip drab Velcro mustache, keeps them all at bay. Dan Best, a very high 3. I remember this song being teased as new music coming up. Again, another one of those that should have been on the album and played live. Better than Meaning of Soul. I play this every morning at 5 a.m. on my way to work. Yeah, never played live. You know, Meaning of Soul did get played live. I mean, it would have been a cool little one to stomp about to, I suppose. But other than that,
Meaning of Soul's got a verse in the chorus, though, right? You think that it's got the sort of Rice Krispie drumming, and then it goes into the all right into the chorus, and you get like, wow, I'm getting that payoff that I'm looking for at the end of a verse. Yeah. Meaning of Soul's a better constructed song.
Yeah. Matt Dare, a big dirty rock and roll banger that would have sounded fierce live. Gem nailing the big Oasis sound. Can't get it to sit on Don't Believe the Truth, so its place as a B-side sits okay. James Freestone, 4 out of 5. The mad sound, mental lyrics, and head shrinker style punk vocals from Liam make it a good combination for me. Yeah, definitely the vocals, like we were saying. He really does. He goes for it. He nails it. That sort of that period. Liam just ripping it a new one, basically. DD says 1 out of 5. It sits there with Little James for me on the I know it exists but never gets played pile. The tune goes nowhere, lyrics are poor, and it simply offers me no feeling, no connection. It's not for me. Sorry, James, you have to waste an episode on this one. Well, that's why I'm linking it in with the big Nebworth news announcement, so it's not just an episode by itself. Matt M4Tet says it's a 3 from me. It tickles me not. Ryan Harvey, it's a no from me. Probably listen to it once when buying the Lila single, then never again. Boy Named Hugh, good track, I think. Guitars sound great on it. Fletch Lives, get out with 5. Wouldn't a 5 be Live Forever? Champagne Supernova territory. Eyeball Ticklers, as good as Live Forever, is it? Yeah, whoever put 5, bless you. Morph says, sounds a bit like a BDI type song. Well, this was very much the template for what BDI would end up doing. Much more riff heavy, garage rock based. Sean McLaughlin, pretty weak if honest. Richard Bowes, the last above average B-side, ragged sound and a wired vocal from LG elevates it. Simon Hughes, I like the raw sound, but doesn't really go anywhere. It sits well with me as a B-side, but nothing special. Saying that, it's still better than 99% of the trash in the charts. Well, yeah, obviously. What else we got? Adam Carnell, Love It and Would Have Had It Over Meaning of Soul on Don't Believe the Truth. Cloudburst, Don't Think I Played It More Than Once. And Radio Said, Bang Average for Oasis Anyway. So yeah, I think that's pretty much confirmed what we said. No one's saying, well, we've got someone who plays it every day. Dan Best plays it every day as he walks to work. That's not too bad.
As he puts on his Dribble Drop Velcro mustache.
Cool, good. All right. Anything else to say on it? I think we've wrung it pretty dry, haven't we?
I think we've done it more than justice to that.
Cool, good. All right. Well, Joel, thank you very much for your time, mate. And yeah, we'll see you again very soon.
Hello, James. This is Howard from Bob Owler, and I just thought I would give my 2 pence worth on the Oasis A to Z of tracks, and we are up to Eyeball Tickler, I believe. Basically, on this track, I think you've really got to go back to position of the whole band's history as to where it lands, and obviously being the B-side of Lila. It's interesting coming on the back of a lead single off an album, because you're always kind of in anticipation as to what the band have been up to, what the recent years in the studio have created. And for me, it's a real sort of great kind of return to a foot stomper of a track. I think in this time in a band's career, a lot of the live appearances were becoming quite predictable. And sometimes we need a bit of an injection of something new. And okay, Lila was a great live, tune. Great one for the fans, really got people energised and, jumping up and down and into a gig. But it was such a shame that Eyeball Tickler didn't become a standard live favourite, to be honest. In fact, I think if I'm right, it never, ever got a live outing. And I think that's a crying shame. The track in itself, okay, there's not an awful lot going on. And I think if I'm correct, it's one of Gem's pen tracks, which to me, is kind of irrelevant. If a tune's good, a tune's good. It doesn't really matter who's put the pen to paper on it. And I just think, it goes along, it hits the ground running. You've got the nice little breakdown halfway through. It's a short track. It's exactly what you want from that sort of track. Liam's vocals are right up there. And particularly, we've got a scream in the middle as well, which is always a good sign for me. And maybe that's indicative of itself as to why it never got performed live, but it's a crying shame. So for me, I think it's a real interesting B-side. Obviously, it might not go down as one of the greats, but it was definitely nice to hear coming back off that lead single and kind of re-energise the fans as to, the band still had quite a lot to give and quite a lot to prove that they were still, a contender for one of the best rock and roll bands of the time. So anyhow, I hope you guys are doing well over at the podcast. And keep on, take it easy. Adios.
Brilliant, Howard. Thank you very much. Great stuff. Completely agree. It is always good to have that burst of energy when you've got a comeback single. I like the point there about sort of, the excitement of sort of understanding what direction the band are going. And here in Eyeball Tickler, it was like, oh, wow, okay, this is going to be interesting. What's this next album going to be? So yeah, very good point. That's sort of interesting to put myself back in that mindset of hearing it for the first time. Good. All right. Well, there we go. What an epic sort of few days it's been. Very excited about Nebworth. Just as excited about the 11th of December in Manchester. Oasis Podcast Live. Make sure you get all the tickets if you are around. The link is in the description below. But remember to use the code SUPERNOVA to get £3 off. So it should be a very exciting evening and be great to see some of you guys. It will have been 2 years since we did an Oasis podcast live. So I'm really, really looking forward to it. All right. So thank you very much for listening to the podcast. Thank you most of all to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is and it's greatly appreciated. As I do on occasion, there's some Patreon gifts flying out to people who support at the $3 level and above, or if people have supported at $1 or $2, but
they've been around for ages. I'm still giving them a little bit something as well. Yeah, so if you are a patron and you haven't given me your address before, then please do get in touch on email or direct message and let me have your address so I know where to post it to. Plus, over on Patreon, there's loads of exclusive episodes, including I recently did a Barrowhouse Radio where we did a History of Oasis Live. 2 hours of amazing tunes from the Boardwalk through to V Festival. And they also put up on Patreon just the music. So none of my links in between the songs. So it works really well. It's basically a brilliant Oasis Live album covering the whole of their career, which, you know, seeing as Oasis never released a live album except for Familiar to Millions, I think it's a really good listen, actually. Do follow me on social media at Oasis Podcast on Facebook and Twitter and Oasis Pod on Instagram. Email me, oasispod@gmail.com. I always love to hear from you. If you can do a review on iTunes, that would be fantastic. We've had a couple recently. It always warms my heart when I see those pop up. And yeah, there's more stuff coming to my YouTube channel as well. So keep an eye on that. Subscribe over there if you get a sec. Oh, a couple of other things been going on. I've got a copy of the book Supersonic. That's the book that Simon Halfon's put together with the unabridged interviews from the film. Had a brief read through, and so far it's really good. I've really, really enjoyed it. I'm going to do a fuller review on the pod or on the YouTube channel. But yeah, that's definitely worth picking up. And also, interestingly, Katie, our good friend who does sound effects podcast, she featured on Matt Morgan's pod. She was brought in. He said he'd wanted to do sort of psychotherapy live, and as a trained psychotherapist, she came on and did that. So that was an interesting crossing of the streams. But yeah, it was really good. So if you are a Matt Morgan subscriber, then check that out. All right, that'll do it for today. Thanks very much for listening, and until next time, whether that's Manchester or whether that's Nebworth, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.